From beach towels to tea towels, and from mugs to water bottles, the TNT Shop has it all. Browse our shop now at tntradio.live. Interviews, news, and views. You're listening to State of the Nation with Brian McClain and Lynn Shaw on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Well, we are back at it. Welcome to State of the Nation. This is Lynn Shaw coming to you live from New York City, along with Brian McClain in Texas. This is TNT Radio, today's News Talk, tntradio.live. Please call in. Our lines are open. Phone number for the open line is on the website and will be played in the breaks. We want to hear from you. Now, listen up, everybody. Join TNT Radio and the annual pilgrimage to the healing city of Bath in Southwest England to hear the pioneers and innovators of our time reveal how excellent health has been hidden from us and explore what the reveal means for the better world we are co-creating. The Better Way Conference 2023 at the Apex Hotel in Bath, UK, from this Thursday, that's today, June 1st to Sunday, June 4th, unveiling a better way for health, freedom, and sovereignty. The Better Way Conference 2023, heard only on TNT Radio. Brian McClain, welcome to State of the Nation. How are you?
I'm great. Yeah, this has been pretty exciting. The thing out there in the city of Bath in Southwest England, I heard a little bit of Patrick Henningsen's show today. TNT's own Mike Ryan was there. That was awesome. Also heard Clive DeCarl over there. So it's been a great day just listening to TNT. I feel more informed every time I do that while I get ready for our shows, Lynn.
I like that. Do you feel more like holistic and more relaxed and more like you know some more things from everything you're listening to? Because I got a lot of headlines I want to hit you with, and it might upset you a little bit.
All right, let's do it. Let's test the waters here. I mean, it's always a mixed bag.
Well, let me just start with that. The current occupant of the White House, he just took a very bad tumble. He was finishing up the commencement speech and giving out diplomas, something to this effect. It happened within the last hour, and he took a very bad hard fall. Now, of course, media is reporting that he stood up, walked off, and was greeting people. However, I've got a different idea about this, Brian. Do you want to hear what I think?
Oh, yeah. Please tell me.
I believe, this is me now, this is the kickoff. Two, he's going to start falling. He's going to have something else happen to him. He's going to have this condition, that condition, so they can move him out and bring somebody new in for 2024, perhaps Gavin Newsom. I think it's all a plan. So we've got, what do you think about that?
You know, I don't like it when I see people, you know, hurt themselves, fall down, embarrass themselves. I'm not one that really revels in that, even though I can be a bit of an a-hole sometimes on the microphone. I feel bad for people when things like that happen. And, you know, it's just sad. It's sad that we have so many people in our government that it's like, why don't you get to retire? Like, why are you, I don't know, maybe they love it. Maybe it's just the thing, but yeah, you know, I don't really like it. And all that aside, you know, my personal feelings aside, I am equally horrified no matter who the Democrats are going to put in. I don't care if it's Michelle Obama, if it's Gavin the Nuisance Newsom, if it's Kamala by some, you know, tragedy or ginned up incident. I'm not good with any of these people. All these people are looking to destroy our country out of either stupidity or on purpose. So, you know, I don't really care who they put up at this point.
Well, I care. And I just want to go back. I want to make it clear. I'm not celebrating that Joe Biden fell by any means. That's not the point of this. Okay. I want to make sure everybody understands that that's not what I'm celebrating, because I don't go for that low hanging fruit. And I think, you know, that. But I think I don't, I really, but I just think this is the plan in action, you know. And then there is the other half of me that says, Brian, I say it to you a lot. They get away with everything. So why do they have to do anything? They just push them through. Doesn't matter. They're just doing whatever they want. Now, I think it's very interesting. Let's switch up a little bit now. What do you think about, do we know about this Biden crime family, this whole Christopher Wray? I really can't follow it anymore because I'm not interested, because nothing happens. They threaten him. Is anything happening there? Can you share anything with us?
No, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, I'm with you. Nothing's really going to happen here. The whole concept of these congressional hearings and all this stuff, I'm pretty sour on them. I mean, I appreciate the information that comes out of them. It's almost like we're participating in some sort of revelation of the method and ritual humiliation as they just, you know, sort of continue to piss on us and tell us that it's raining.
You know what, Mr. Bryan, I think you got to pick it up a little bit today. You're seeming a little bit.
am I dragging
a little bit
the chain?
Down in the.
I'm dragging the chain
some,
a little bit today, aren't
no,
I, Lynn?
No, but you really are. Now, I am here to pick up State of the Nation right now. Now, here we go.
All right.
Now, listen, before we bring in our excellent first guest, Carrie Harrison, I want to, I know you're going to be upset about this. Billy Joel will no longer be doing his residency here in New York City at Madison Square Garden. I have to throw this in because this man has done, I don't know, 10 million shows. And I know people, Brian, I'm not kidding, that have been to his show, the same exact show, 80, 100 times. They just keep going. They're that much of a fan. What do you think about all of this?
I can relate. I've seen Cannibal Corpse probably 30 times.
Okay.
So, you know,
there you
and
go.
I've gone
there
out of my way to see that show. So I get it. Does he still do does he focus on the doo-wop era, or is it more classic Piano Man era in his shows? I'm not sure what he does.
More classic, because the fans always want the old music, right? But he did recently sell he's a real New Yorker and born here, raised here. That's his whole thing, New York. But he recently sold his very, very large mansion. I guess that's kind of a mansion. I guess that describes it. Out in Long Island in the Hamptons, and he's moving to Florida. Okay, so there you go. End of the residency. But let's get to our guest, because I can't wait. I've got a bunch of questions for him, and I'm sure you do also. Brian, Carrie Harrison joins us, award-winning broadcaster, host of the Los Angeles Morning Drive program, Rethinking Heroes on Los Angeles Public Radio. Oh, I like that title. He looks at the real Jack Ryans among us, as well as whistleblowers and brave voices in a sea of censorship and cynical politics. You know what? Rethinking Heroes is like us right here on TNT, available on all major streaming platforms, rethinkingheroes.com. He has received best commentary from the Associated Press and was nominated for an Edward R. Murrow Award in Public Radio Excellence. Again, everybody, rethinkingheroes.com. Welcome, Carrie Harrison, to State of the Nation.
Hello, Lynn. Thrilled to be here.
Well, wait a minute. Carrie, I'm here along with Brian McLean, and he's in Texas.
I can see Brian and his beard, even though it's radio.
That's the magic, my friend. There you go. Now, let me jump right in here. I'm going to jump in. It's June 1st. It's Pride Month. Answer this however you see fit, Carrie Harrison. What is the focus of Pride Month that is missed or overlooked in your opinion? And what do you say when an entire swath of a culture or history is reduced to a time period, gay pride, Black History Month? Thoughts on all of this? Start us off.
Well, you know, it's like Memorial Day, but different, maybe brighter colors. What's missing at this point, I think, is the point of it. So for many years, the whole gay movement has become assimilated, which was the goal. And then you get giant corporations in your pride parade, and it has nothing to do with anything but a giant corporate pride parade, you know, with rainbow flags. And that's lovely, but it pretends as if people are equal. Now, if we're the point of pride was to establish some sort of equality within a minority group, fair to say, you can't, in most states, bar Black people from living in an apartment. You can't fire people for being Black, but you can for them being gay. Look at the state of Florida right here where I'm sitting in beautiful Tampa, Florida. It was beautiful before I moved here. It was beautiful the day I moved here, but then the governor decided that Cubans and gays and Black people, and let's find out who else next, are not welcome in a state where they just moved. Oops. It feels kind of like 1927 Berlin to me. So what does pride mean to me? Well, it never meant much to me because I can come and go as I please. I'm lucky. My ancestors signed the Declaration of Independence. My ancestors are framers of the Constitution. I came over on the Mayflower. So I really kind of never felt like there was a problem from my perspective. But I'm now in the crosshairs because guess what? I fit into that category now. I'm Cuban. No, I'm not Cuban, but I'm now part of the members that include Cubans. Now, what's going to happen to all those people in Miami that are conservative voters when they find out that starting July 1st, they can't buy a house in Florida if they're Cubans? I don't know that he's thought this all the way through because there's a lot of people in Miami, and you sure don't want that to come back and bite you. That's a very long roundabout way to say, I have no idea at this point. I couldn't tell you what it means any more than you could.
So definitions all around are a problem these days. That's something we keep coming back to. It's like the lexicon and the vocabulary are just getting completely washed out. It's almost like we had our friend Karen Hunt on yesterday, and she was talking about when she was a child and she was moving with her family through like communist Yugoslavia or something like that. And someone told her, if you want to understand the media, just you have to read it and understand that it's not about truth or gray areas or out and out lies. It's about the goals of the establishment and the narrative. So you can basically just read everything upside down, inverted, backwards, and you'll be better off from the get-go.
Well put. You know, Brian, a lot of people, some people listening, if they are a little long in the tooth, might have heard of somebody named Walter Cronkite. Long dead now, buried, nothing left except a mere memory. He was a guy back in the days of TV news when it was really rock and rolling, and they discovered there was value in news because really it was a required FCC mandate in the United States. So a broadcaster, let's say it's CBS or NBC, ABC, gets a free license to make billions of dollars. Woo-hoo, what a day we're having. And in return, and the public owns that license, but what do you own the public? Nothing. Yes, but shouldn't they get some of that money back? Hell no. But in return, you provide them basic usable information, like 30 minutes. The network will give 30 minutes and let them know that there's maybe something in the water that will kill them. Or, by the way, we're at war. You know, things like that. So that was called the news, and it was not an area that was meant to be commodified or screwed with. It was a mandate by the FCC. And then in the 60s and 70s, he started to realize that more people are listening to this Walter Cronkite guy and watching him on the TV set than are watching Rod Serling on Night Gallery. This is interesting. And then it morphs into infotainment, and then everyone, you know, every news just looks like local TV news. It is nothing more than a way to get people to buy cars, plane tickets, or discount toilet paper. And so here we are, Brian. Here we are, Lynn. Here we are, everybody, in exactly the same dinghy together going, but where's the Titanic? You know, can I hook onto the side of it? Which way is it listing today? So how do we, where do we go? You guys will find that often you'll be on like Al Jazeera to find out what's going on Capitol Hill. You might have to go to DW, the German network, to find out what's happening on Capitol Hill, because they have conveniently fired all those people who used to get salaries and benefits, that used to be bureau chiefs, whose job was to bring the expert. These are people who had read Homer. These are people who could do more than just run a keyboard, but could run thinking and evaluation, and had a world of built-in infrastructure and history to be able to tell and translate those stories for the public good. They're all gone too. So to everyone's point, here we are, with slogans flying around, a rudderless ship, clueless, and we're all just kind of trying to grab on to everything that flaps in front of us. How that relates to pride, I still can't tell you.
Gary Harrison, I'm still, so I guess you left California. You just mentioned you're in Tampa, Florida, but I want to focus.
I did.
Are you, you made the big move, you left?
I did. It was an unlivable place. The climbing over homeless people, which I'm good at, so I'm not complaining, but the dodging bullets for me is a line in the sand. When I go to Trader Joe's, if people don't know what that is. It's kind of a groovy grocery store where you can get like good prices and it's clean inside. They call you a sir. You know, you go in there, it's a sanctuary. When you come out and a bullet hits the window next to you, not aimed at you necessarily, but it was meant for somewhere, something, we'll never know. I thought, you know, gosh, on a Tuesday evening, dodging bullets is not the way I consider a free and open society. So I'm gonna let LA be what it is. They can have the Kardashians. They can have all the Kardashians. I am not gonna get in their way of their Kardashian-like lifestyle, their weird Walking Dead zombie-esque 140,000 homeless people living on sidewalks and excrements, rats crawling around, cholera. I thought, because I don't wanna get old and retire in a tent. So I came back to, as they say on the east coast of it, Florida, where I could enjoy some sunshine.
Well, very nice explanation of that. Let me just throw this at you. The website, again, is rethinkingheroes.com, everybody. Define hero for us in the context of today's society. Are there heroes or people who contract to do good things? Heroism implies above and beyond, well, to me, not that which is a part of a job description, but explain, define hero for us.
Well, what a great question, Lynn. Yes, there are heroes. You guys are heroes. Heroes are people who, against the tide, against the weather, against the winds, are willing to stand up and find out for the benefit of others. It's not a self-centered act. You're doing it really for the benefit of others. During a war, a hero is not a guy who jumps on the grenade because he loves it. He's doing it because it saves his entire battalion. And so a hero today in this crazy miasma of nothingness and seemingly meaningless are people that are willing to stick their neck out while the blade of the scythe is swinging around and poke it out and see which way the sun is shining. So it really, it's an act of bravery looking for truth. It's an act of bravery defining and bringing up whistleblowers. It's an act of bravery and awesomeness during a time of profound geopolitics, helping unravel and explain to people who have no access and no understanding to whatever's going on in front of them. So originally when I started this show, Rethinking Heroes, it was to find the real Jack Ryans, you know, the cool people that have done cool things. And then I found out there are people like Dan Ellsberg of the Pentagon Papers, who's now almost, you know, gone because of cancer, and many others who have, you know, the Julian Assanges of it all. Like, these people are heroes, you know? So let's talk about them, give them some love, and show people that being brave, an act of bravery, is a cool thing. Cowering, withdrawing, becoming small and disappearing because life is inconvenient is not an act of heroism. It's an act of defeat. So many of us want to be front on that horse and ride it hard and fast because guess what? This is no rehearsal. We actually live in that time we used to joke about. Well, imagine someday when it's, here it is. Here it is.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, hey, you're a hero to us as well for doing what you do. You know, you're right. These are the times where sticking your neck out while the scythe is moving quickly are dangerous. But what other option do we have? We can't hide in corners anymore. Our country is at stake here, and we need to lead by example when it comes to having tough discussions. So thank you for everything you do, Carrie. Again, rethinkingheroes.com is the website. We're going to have to let you go, but take us out of here with some final thoughts, please.
Final thoughts, just to button up this pride thing. I wasn't being coy. It's just hard to explain because it's multi-layered. So many people have latched on to my train. My train. I own it. I want to own it. Who doesn't? And there's the LGBTQ plus IAAA plus LMNOP, 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 and it keeps going. I cannot explain it. I am not qualified to explain all those other people. But I can tell you this, as a taxpayer, as an upstanding American, as a relative of the founding fathers who have signed the Declaration of Independence and framed our Constitution, I'm a proud member. What I do when the lights go out is my business. What you do when the lights go out are your business. And we will both defend each other's right to have those rights, to have self-determination no matter where it leads. So God bless America and God bless you guys.
There you go. Perfect final words. Thank you so much. RethinkingHeroes.com, everybody. That's Carrie Harrison. And this is State of the Nation on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
TNT Radio's John Helmer and George Eliason.
General Kaluzhny, he has not been seen for several weeks, has led to speculation that in the Western media, in the Russian media, and the Ukrainian media, that he had been killed in a Russian missile attack, which hit a high command staff meeting and had been so damaging to the Ukrainians that they had now to prove that Kaluzhny was still alive. Now, what is the significance of this episode on Thursday night? First, Ukrainian soldiers are watching this, and from private to general, they now understand that if the Russians can strike Kaluzhny, no one at all, is safe from a highly targeted Russian missile attack. But that leads to a second question. Why do the United States and NATO allies protect Vladimir Zelensky, the president of the Ukraine, so much better than they've been able to protect Kaluzhny and other officers and their men?
War of the Worlds with John Helmer and George Eliason on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Radio works because of its ability to personalize to the listener.
What's exciting these days is that people are rediscovering it. You know, people are really rediscovering just how powerful radio is, how ubiquitous it is. It's in our cars, it's in our homes. There are so many new ways to access it. It's everywhere.
To find out more, go to tntradio.live. Let's talk about the state of the nation. Call Brian McLean and Lynn Shaw now from the U.S. and Canada. Call 1-888-201-6425. From the U.K., call 033-0024-1026. And from Australia and New Zealand, call 1-800-670-310. Free speech is alive and well on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
All right, we've got a returning guest here, becoming a bit of a regular, Joe DiGenova, joining us once again here, founding partner of the Washington, D.C. law firm, DiGenova and Tosing. Joe, welcome back to State of the Nation. I'm here with Lynn Shaw, per usual, and we're very happy to have you back on the show.
It's wonderful to be with you guys.
It's always appreciated when you join us. I know you're one of the favorites over here. Our audience always loves it when you stop by. Now, I was accused of dragging the chain and having a bad attitude this morning by Lynn because I'm so sick of these oversight committees just, you know, doing what they do and exposing all these things that we all know what's going on. But there's just no teeth. So I don't know. Maybe you can drag me back to a place of sanity here. I need a lawyer at this point. So I'm really glad you're here because I'm getting emotional about this stuff. I'm just sick of it. So Joe, tell us a little bit about your thoughts on where we're at with this whole oversight committee, the Biden crime family, the FBI, this whole thing with Chris Wray and this whole kerfuffle that's going on right now.
Sure. Well, let me just advise you that you have the right to remain silent. And perhaps that'll make you happier for about 5 minutes.
Okay.
Here's where we are. It's pretty clear that the committee chaired by Comer, the oversight committee, is completely dissatisfied with the response from Wray, which was basically, well, you can come over to our house and look at these documents with redactions. And Comer said, that's not going to cut it. That's not going to work. We already know what's in the document. They've been told by someone what is actually in the document. And of course, the names are vital to understanding the degree of corruption involving this particular bribe offer and apparently bribe acceptance by the then vice president, our current president, Joe Biden. So that's going to go to contempt. The contempt thing is, What Chris Wray wants to avoid is being held in contempt because he's a pretty boy. What you have to understand about Chris Wray is he's got a great haircut and a great tailor. And all he cares about is what he looks like. He's perfectly coiffed and perfectly dressed. He doesn't like conflict. That's because he's a nobody. He's a do-nothing. He's a guy with no talent. He got this job because Chris Christie recommended him to Donald Trump. I recommended to Donald Trump that he not hire Chris Christie because we said he was unprincipled, he was not a man of integrity, and he was disloyal. And he has proved every one of my predictions to be correct. Now, when you do contempt, you can do a couple. You can do civil contempt, which means that the Congress goes to the district court in Washington, files a lawsuit to force the FBI director to turn over the records. But that gets you into court, and it's time consuming. If you do criminal contempt, it gets referred to the U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia, who's a Biden appointee, and is not going to hold, is not going to charge Christopher Wray. So the thing to do is you have to embarrass Wray. You have to hold hearings. You have to invite him to appear in public, and then you make him say, "I can't do that," and you force him to answer. But since they already know what is in that record, I think the most important thing here is to force him to turn over the documents. But as I said, it may very well be that the mere threat of contempt will be enough to force him to comply. But you never can tell. At this point, when you have a corrupt Department of Justice, which will defend him to no end, you know, they may try to withhold the document. But we shall see. We shall see.
Okay, that helps me a little bit. Let me just throw this. So are they able to force him to comply? Is this possible? I think that's where my black pill moment came in. And I just feel like, I don't feel like they're going to be able to force him to do this. He's going to shout national security or something like that. And it'll all just fall apart.
Well, you can force him if you can get a federal judge to order him to turn over the documents. You can force him if the U.S. Attorney for the District of Columbia is willing to hold him in criminal contempt and put him on trial. I don't think the latter is going to happen. I think what they're going to end up doing is probably ending up going to court to force him to comply. But for Christopher Wray, that is not a delightful position to be in because he doesn't like conflict. And so maybe they'll be able to get or maybe he'll come to his senses, which he has very little of, and agree that they should see the document in its pristine nativist fashion. But I have a sneaking suspicion that someone's going to give them the document anyway, maybe one of the whistleblowers. We don't know that yet, but that's not the only copy of that document in that file that exists, I can assure you.
Okay, that's great. That actually makes me feel a little bit better. I feel a little bit lighter already. Lynn, that chain has gotten a little bit lighter here. Joe's helping us out. I tell you what, we're going to take a quick headline, and then I'm going to come back, and Lynn's got a couple questions for you right here on State of the Nation on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Here's some more potentially bad news.
TNT Radio News.
This is James O'Neill with a check of today's headlines. Republican senators aren't happy with the debt ceiling deal passed in Speaker Kevin McCarthy's House Wednesday evening, claiming it will be about as popular as Bud Light. London's Daily Telegraph reports an email sent to RAF staff on January 19th of 2021 from Squadron Leader Andrew Harwin complained their training courses for pilots were predominantly white male heavy, without enough candidates from Black, Asian minority ethnic backgrounds.
At TNT Radio, we never go home. We're committed to bringing you our take on the biggest topics of our time. We're on air 24/7 online globally, no matter what. We've got you covered on TNT Radio.
We're talking with Joe DeGeneva. Joe, my first question is, where's Victoria?
She is hard at work.
Oh, okay. Well, that's an acceptable excuse. We'll accept that. Now, Joe, if anybody can answer this, it's you. I'm really trying to understand this whole thing, just for myself even. Like, how do you get around Wray or anyone from Intel claiming that the subpoena directed to them will necessarily divulge sources and methods and will put agents in peril? Is that making sense?
The mere fact that it's turned over to a congressional committee doesn't mean that it's going to be public. They have the right to look at all. They do classified briefings. They look at documents, pristine documents. No one ever sees that in the public. And the same thing can happen here. The committee wants to see it. They're not asking that the public see it. The committee has a right through its oversight function under Article 1 of the U.S. Constitution to see whatever it wants to see or needs to see. So the claim that they're going to compromise sources and methods doesn't work because Congress has a right to see that. They have a duty to see it. They're not saying they're going to make it public and compromise the sources. they want to see it for oversight purposes because they believe that the president of the United States, while he was vice president, took bribes and is now impeachable.
You know, Who's the big guy? Yeah. I'm just sorry, Lynn. I'm just curious. I'm getting everybody's opinion on this lately. We've been hearing about 10% for the big guy all these years, and now people are starting to say, well, maybe the big guy was Obama, right? What do you think? Was the big guy Joe or was the big guy Obama?
This is a Biden family affair. Obama doesn't have anything to do with this. Obama was going to make so much money when he got out because he was the first almost black president. That he and his wife have done quite well. They didn't need to take bribes. The problem for Obama was that he and his administration allowed Hillary Clinton and Bill Clinton to take bribes while she was Secretary of State through the Clinton Foundation. So if Obama has anything going against him, it's he allowed Hillary Clinton to take bribes through the Clinton Foundation, and he allowed Donald Trump to be framed, and he knew it was happening all the time by Hillary and the FBI and James Comey. So make no mistake about it, Barack Obama is dirty inside and out on this whole set of schemes and happening. So believe me, he's not looking for publicity on this because he couldn't withstand any set of questions about it.
Interesting. You know, Joe, I'm back in like the courts and all that. That's where my mind, I keep going there. Like, what about an in-camera hearing where a judge could oversee and ensure real information is given out and divulged without compromising any kind of safety?
Well, that isn't necessary. Congress is entitled to the information. They're not entitled to a judge in between them. Congress has complete oversight authority under Article 1 of the Constitution of the executive branch. They do not need a filter. If they want to use civil contempt, that's only that gives them the power to force the director to turn it over to them, not to have a judge filter it for them. And that would be unacceptable to the Congress because they don't need a filter. They don't want a filter now, and they would never accept that.
Okay. I feel like I've been hearing this word holding Christopher Wray, you know, in contempt for about a week now, but I don't see anything moving forward. Am I correct in that assessment or not?
Well, holding somebody in contempt has to be done correctly. And that means you have to lay the groundwork for it. You have to have letters. There has to be communication. Demands have to be made. A record has to be established so that when you go to the House floor, you have a record upon which, just like when you do impeachment, you just can't impeach somebody. You got to have a record. You got to have hearings, and you got to have testimony, documents, etc. So in this case, what the committee is doing by sending a series of letters, making a series of phone calls, having some meetings with him, they are creating a record. It's a serious process. Holding somebody, he's a sub-cabinet member, he's not a member of the cabinet, but holding somebody in contempt is really serious business. In addition, they can also do resolutions of censure. They can embarrass him. They can call him the worst possible things. They can call him corrupt, that he's incompetent, that he can't do his job. They can pass a resolution in the House saying that about him, as well as holding him in contempt. They have a lot of tools politically that they can use to do the kind of thing that Christopher Wray cannot stand. He doesn't like a rumpled suit, and that would make him one ugly-looking rumpled suit.
Yes, it would. It certainly would indeed. I mean, a $5 million bribery memo, that is a big deal, right? I mean, I know when we're looking at, you know, debts of trillions of dollars, debt ceilings in the trillions and all this stuff, $5 million maybe a splash in the pan, but I mean, it should be considered a big deal by the Congress and by the American people, wouldn't you say? I mean, and could be the thread that unravels a number of other things.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt that the $5 million is a huge bribe under any standard. But when it involves the Vice President of the United States, it's even worse. That number is staggering, but it's not alone. You have to understand that there are records now in the possession of the Oversight Committee from the Treasury Department that show that dozens of banks filed suspicious activity reports of transactions involving the Biden family to the tune of $30 to $40 million from foreign sources that were suspect. Those funds came in during the vice presidency and after, and during times when Biden, with the little Hunter in his entourage, was on Air Force Two going to countries that Joe Biden had responsibility for under the Obama administration. So believe me, the $5 million is only a portion of a gigantic amount of money that the Biden family has taken over the years.
Joe, prediction, Hunter will be charged with something very minimal, and he'll plead out and use his diminished mental capacity, perhaps, in mitigation, and he'll get a slap on the wrist, and Joe might soon bow out and be declared incompetent for further investigative, perhaps, efforts, and all will be forgotten. Do you think that's far-fetched?
I actually don't think that Hunter may be charged at all. I think that this is such a corrupt FBI and DOJ that, let me just tell you something. This case has been going on for 5 years. Nothing has happened. We have FBI agents and IRS agents who have complained about the thumb being put on the investigation by the Department of Justice. They feel that but Joe Biden is going to pardon Hunter if he gets indicted. He's not going to wait. He's not going to worry about reelection. So he's not going to be indicted. The Justice Department is going to put off any action involving Hunter Biden until after the election in 2024. If he were to be charged now, it would create a horrible problem for the president. And Merrick Garland knows that. Why do you think a U.S. attorney in Delaware, David Weiss, who when these IRS agents complained about the slowness of the investigation and their inability to get certain things done, he had them all removed from the case. 13 IRS agents were removed from the Hunter Biden case. That is a scandal of such immense proportions. And the fact that the American media does nothing about it, they do tut tut, oh, well, these things happen. It's just a disgruntled agent. But no, there aren't 13 disgruntled agents. This is a corrupt Justice Department. This guy, David Weiss in Delaware, the holdover Trump U.S. attorney, is a factotum. He's useless. If he was a real U.S. attorney, he would be screaming at the top of his lungs, this is a disaster for the department. Merrick Garland and Christopher Wray are destroying federal law enforcement every day by the manner in which they are handling the Biden family corruption. This is truly, this is a time in history that I thought I would never see, that I thought I would never see a corrupt Attorney General of the United States and FBI director working in tandem to protect an entire family of the President of the United States. Because make no mistake about it, those funds have gone to almost everybody in that family. Every one of them is complicit in a bribery, conspiracy, Foreign Corrupt Practices Act series of events. So to me, Hunter is just, he's peanuts at this point. And I, as I say, I don't think they're going to charge him. I think they're doing everything they can to prevent charging him until after the next election. And then at that point, they won't even charge him. If they do, the president will pardon him. He's going to pardon him no matter what. So this is all a big joke. But it's also something that could blow up in Joe Biden's face. You know, he tripped and fell today at the Air Force Academy over a apparently a sandbag that was up on the podium. What the hell a sandbag is doing up on the podium is I can't figure out. But he fell and he obviously hurt himself. This guy is dysfunctional physically and mentally. The question of how long he can last becomes more serious every day. One of America's most senior, serious journalists, Brit Hume, who's on Fox, said that Joe Biden was senile. That, to me, was the moment in which the media decided that it's now fair game to discuss the mental incapacity of the sitting president of the United States. And there just isn't any doubt about it. He is not a functioning president, physically or mentally.
Yeah. And all this money gone to various family members. I'm with you, Joe. I'm with you, Joe. It's like I never thought I would see this, you know, being openly talked about. And just it really is staggering and amazing. Very well said. We're going to have to let you go. Lynn, do you have anything further you wanted to ask our legal expert of the day before we get out of here?
Well, I did want Joe to cheer us up, but, you know, we didn't really accomplish that. But we got to have you back more, Joe, because you so succinctly help us understand these very critical and crucial issues that we need to understand and tell other people about. So thank you for all you're doing to help us understand what's going on.
Well, you're entirely welcome. Great to be with you guys. It's always enjoyable.
Thanks, Joe. This
Amazing.
Is today's news talk. Yeah, he's wonderful. I listen to him all day. We've got to have him on every day. He's just incredible. This is today's news talk, TNT Radio.
De-weaponizing weather with reality and perspective.
One of the more repulsive things that has happened with the climate change issue is seeing all these people come out of the woodwork who do not love the weather for the weather's sake. They only love the weather when they can use it for their own purpose. And their purpose has nothing to do with the weather. It has to do with the political agenda. So another classic shows up. Back on May 9th, a friend of mine alerted me to the idea that we were predicting it to be very cold in India. And the reason we were looking in India was because we were also studying the cyclone. Remember how we were predicting the big cyclone to develop, right? So we were looking at the whole weather pattern in there. And he alerted me to the fact that it was a record-breaking month for applicants to climb Mount Everest, which was a pretty unaware thing to do, given how cold it was. So we let people know, right? So we've had 17 people tragically die up on Mount Everest trying to scale that. And what does the Guardian do? They blame climate change. And this is exactly what goes on, folks. They had no idea what was going to be happening with the weather, but as soon as it happens, and it's not because of climate change, they blame climate change. This agenda is one of deception, distortion, and delusion. And the examples are coming fast and furious because of the fact that there's a big offensive on the way now because they realize people are waking up to the whole scam. This is TNT Climate and Weather Watchdog meteorologist Joe Bastardi asking you to put that stuff aside and enjoy the weather. It's the only weather you've got.
Close your eyes and think about this. Imagine taking your child to school where all the other kids have access to textbooks, paper, and pencils, but your child is only allowed to listen. Would you be okay with that? That's what it means to be blind. For every 100 books a sighted child can access, a blind child has access to less than 5. Help put the world at the fingertips of vision-impaired kids. Donate now at braillehouse.org.au.
The conversation continues with Lynn Shaw, Brian McLean, and State of the Nation on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Evan Nierman possesses 20 years of high-level experience in public relations, marketing, PR, crisis management, online media, international relations, and public affairs. He's the CEO and founder of Red Banyan, an organization that excels in PR and crisis management. That website, everybody, Red Banyan. I'm going to spell that for you. Red, BANYAN.com. Also, new book, The Cancel Culture Curse, From Rage to Redemption in a World Gone Mad. And we have so much to talk to him about. Welcome, Evan Nierman, to State of the Nation.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm looking forward to getting into it.
We have to really get into it. And I've got Brian McLean. He's here with me. Now, listen, we've got the Target, we've got the Kohl's, we've got the Chick-fil-A, we've got now baseball, all of it. Tell us, whatever happened, this is what I want to know, and I ask people every single day, Evan, whatever happened to the shareholder derivative suit, and why aren't there any in view of what we're seeing? Because I always think money talks, and where are the shareholders? Why aren't we hearing from them? What is going on with all of this happening? All of this? What? Fill us in.
Well, I think there are investors that are upset. I think there are people who are shareholders. I think that there is a general part of the population that just wants to be able to drink a beer or go shopping in a big box store without having politics rammed down their throats. And what we're seeing right now is a litany of companies that are jumping into some of the most divisive, hot button issues of the day, and then they're seemingly surprised when there's a reaction and a blowback. And part of the reason this is so stupid and self-defeating is when they go in on one side, they've automatically alienated half of their potential customer base. And then when inevitably they start to feel the pain from people saying, you know what, you've taken it a bridge too far. We're going to boycott you. And their shares start to go down. They start to lose revenue. All of a sudden they make adjustments and then they end up ticking off the people who were in their camp to begin with. So then 100% of the potential customer base is frustrated with them. So I think the message to companies is increasingly clear. Focus on your products, focus on your services, stay out of politics.
How did it get this bad? I mean, it's like, I remember back when I was a kid, you know, and Target kind of came on the scene. I was a West Coast kid at the time, and same with Walmart. I remember them driving the likes of like JCPenney's, Thrifty, Kmart. Like they nuked them all. They you know, just shot them all out of the water, drove them out of the market. You know, maybe now and again you'll find a hanger on Kmart or JCPenney out there, but it just blows me away that like these giant mega corporations have come in and destroyed the previous, you know, versions of the mega corporations and destroyed untold amounts of, you know, mom and pop brick and mortar stores also, that they're willing to just, you know, over identity politics, just lose billions of dollars. Target's stock has dropped, last I looked, $12.7 billion in 2 weeks. Like when do companies start to realize that identity politics are killing them from a shareholder perspective? And why are they doing it? Is the narrative more valuable than the money for some reason?
Yeah, I think they're getting the message. And after the last several weeks, really in the run-up to June, which was being touted as Pride Month, I think what we've seen is a dramatic shift in the population here in this country saying enough is enough. And rather than Pride Month being focused on that per se, it's instead become overreach of companies and the companies making this decision. I think in some cases you ask for the reason behind it. There are instances where the company has an agenda, they're pushing a political agenda. In other instances, these are big corporations with a lot of moving parts and lots of different personalities. And so in the case of, for instance, Bud Light, I think what we saw was a VP decided, oh, we're going to go after some new prospective clients. We need to appeal to a younger generation. Let's cozy up to a trans TikTok influencer as a way of doing that, not taking into consideration how much they would be alienating their customer base. And then I think there are also instances where there's outrage and there's a scandal and there are calls for boycotts where the company hasn't really done much, but people are quick to anger in this world. Right now, cancel culture is a big deal. People want to jump on a bandwagon. They want to feel powerful, whether it's taking down a company, whether it's going after an individual. You have folks online getting their news from social media where the most strident messages are the ones that break through, and then they become activists, keyboard warriors, if you will. And in some cases, perhaps the company has gone too far and they need to be brought back into line. And in other instances, it's really manufactured controversies, things blown out of proportion, but it's increasingly hard to tell. And with it happening every day, it becomes even more confusing to the average person who's watching this.
Well, you know, Evan, I think Target really crossed the line with onesies for 3-month-olds. You know, you can be trans written on the front of them or something like that. That really got everybody going with this. But here's what I want to get at, and I don't understand, Evan. Corporate equity indices are critical over objections of shareholders and customers, and the policies just continue to persist. Now, I'm here in New York City, and I keep hearing about something called CEI, this Corporate Equity Index, and that these companies are being directed, all the Fortune 500s, by Wall Street. Have you heard anything about this?
That is not something that I've heard about, but it doesn't sound to me so off base, because you have companies right now that are scared of their own shadow. But I do think one shift that's a positive that we can look at, and something that is changing, is if you think in the context of cancel culture, and mind you, cancel culture is not exactly the same as an economic boycott. Cancel culture is often targeting of an individual. It's less about using financial pressure to produce a policy change. It's more about vengeance and extracting a pound of flesh. And companies in the last couple of years, anytime there was a controversy involving an employee, they were very quick to cut ties with that individual, to terminate them, even at the risk of violating employment contracts with those individuals. I have seen in recent months many instances where, while corporations in the past may have tried so hard to just instantly cut the person loose because there was a public outcry or a mob on Twitter was clamoring for action, I think companies are becoming much more circumspect about that. They're being more careful, and they're starting to understand that they're going to ultimately incur more litigation costs, more legal costs, and maybe even more PR costs if they just kowtow to the mob. And so I think that is a shift. And people ask me all the time, are we going to have to just learn to live with cancel culture for the rest of our lives? I don't think that's the case. That's part of the reason I wrote the book, The Cancel Culture Curse, was to define cancel culture, to expose it as the insidious force that it is, present it as a fundamentally un-American proposition and practice, and to do everything that's in my power to help people understand the forces that have brought us to now, and then what we can do to defeat this, because it is affecting not just the business world, but it's having a severe impact also on the fabric of our society.
Is that like self-censorship? Is that one of the, what do you think the worst sort of general effect culturally and on society is? I mean, we'll put the, you know, the history of it and the legal stuff all aside, like what's,
sure,
you know, for like young people and older people, what do you think the worst of this is that we may not be, that we may be missing?
Well, there's so much about it that I could fill a few chapters. In fact, I did, but I'll cut to the chase and tell you, here are a couple of key points. In America, we believe in free speech. Cancel culture is an attempt to silence free speech, to encroach upon free speech, to control people's speech. Another thing that we believe in the United States, part of our philosophy as a society, is there should be a competing marketplace of ideas. Let the best ideas win. And instead, what cancel culture seeks to do is an unelected group, many times a minority group with a minority view, believes that they have the truth, and therefore it's incumbent upon them not to share their perspective, but to shut down someone with an opposing perspective. And that's not okay. Now, meanwhile, the other thing that cancel culture does that's so harmful to our society is it denies people due process. We have a judicial system in this country that presumes that you're innocent until proven guilty. It requires that before someone is punished in some fashion, that they have a chance to represent themselves and to present facts, and that there's a jury of their peers who are coming into it with an open mind, willing to hear the case that's presented. Cancel culture turns that on its head. A group of people who don't have the facts, don't have the information, are not non-biased. They come in having prejudged the person's guilt, and then they serve as judge, jury, and executioner before the person even has a fair opportunity to present the facts.
The book, everybody, is The Cancel Culture Curse, From Rage to Redemption in a World Gone Mad. The website, redbanyan.com. Evan, finish us up. What will corporate landscape look like in 5 years?
Oh my gosh, how am I supposed to know? My crystal ball, I left it at home and I'm sitting at the office. So I don't,
okay,
what,
now,
what kind of question is that? We don't know.
That's a good question. But and also, let me throw another one. Come on, these are good questions. Now, the other question I have is, will these companies we're talking about right now, will they be in existence in a couple of years?
I think they will. I think certain companies of a size you know, are they're too big to cancel ultimately. I think a boycott can severely impact them. We're talking about tens of billions of dollars, $1 billion a day roughly for Target, tens of billions for Anheuser-Busch. At the end of the day, I think what you're likely to see is not the bankrupting of these companies and scrubbing them out of existence, but I do think you're going to see policy shifts and you're going to see big changes underway.
Evan, finish us up. I'm going to ask again another question as we go out to top of the hour. What would you tell them to do right now to change this? Because I don't see anything changing in the last couple of weeks with all of this. What would you tell them as the expert they should do?
Focus on your business. Stay out of politics. Assume that some people just want to shop in your store. They just want to buy your product. They don't want you ramming your politics down their throats. Focus on your core business and leave politics to the politicians. There are already enough of them and they're already reviled as it is.
Excellent words. Evan Nierman, we have to let you go. We will have you back because we got to keep our eye on this. RedBanyan.com, everybody. Thanks, Evan. Talk to you soon. This is today's News Talk, TNT Radio.